It's time for Let's Talk Money.
Good afternoon, Chattanooga. This is Let's Talk Money with Jamie O'Donnell and Jim Place. 267-1023 is the number. Starting our market day, Dow Jones Industrial averages up 93 points, sitting at 32,755. S&P down 7, sitting at 3,943. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Lock the doors, though. Attorneys are in town.
Yeah. Put the valuables up. Be nice. With us today, Steve Barham and Jeffrey Maddox. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Doing well. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, glad to have you. All right, I got to go to Max real quick. Max, are you there?
I'm here.
What happened to your house?
My dishwasher.
Ooh. That's not
fun. It wasn't a big leak, but it damaged a lot of stuff very quickly.
Never a fun experience. Sorry about that.
They've taken my cabinets out.
Ooh.
We're having to eat out. I mean, we can fix a few things at home, but not, you know, there's nowhere to set anything. So, and everything that was in the kitchen is now in the garage, so it's just a mess.
It's a bitch out there in the real world.
It is. And then you die. So
apparently you don't need an attorney. You need a plumber.
Yeah, well, no, I need a lot of things. Prayers would be good, too. By the way, happy birthday, young'un. Dad said it was your birthday yesterday.
It was, and I took the day off and thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Well,
so
that's cool.
Back at it now. All right, Steve, let's start with you. Litigation's the topic today. Both you guys are with Chambliss. What's your focus?
Right, so my focus runs the gamut to a lot of things, but I think the essence of it is generally business-to-business type litigation.
So, okay.
So I find myself representing the plaintiff, the defendant, about equal amounts of times because it just depends on, let's say it's a business divorce or something where two people have gone into business and they've decided that it's not working out to continue. Generally, it's one of them feels like they're carrying all the weight and the other one is not doing what they're supposed to do or slacking off or whatever, and now it's time to try to get rid of that bum from the business. And so we might file that lawsuit to try to break that business venture apart. It can be dealing with non-competes where either a business has an employee or a former owner that's left and now competing, or there's a person who's left the business and decides, hey, I want to know what I can and can't do, and we'll advise them on that. So it really runs a gamut.
Jeffrey, how about you?
Yeah, I do a lot of similar stuff as Steve, somewhat in the commercial litigation, business litigation type of disputes, not only business to business, but also, say, shareholder disputes where you have shareholders fighting with one another or you have corporate breakups, former executives leaving, things like that, where some litigation may arise, or really just even more advisory roles in those situations where someone were to leave, working through those situations of how do we affect this. We're looking at the terms of the agreements, how that works on payouts or severance, those type of things. But also, I do a lot of work with financial institutions as well, from banks, credit unions, other type of lenders, and that lends me a lot to the bankruptcy world as well, in some aspects. So.
Okay.
Let me ask either one of you this. What percentage of the time are you involved in litigation that had been the planning been done properly on the front end, it would have never taken place?
90% of the time, I would say, that's probably the case, that we found ourselves that they did the paperwork, and the situation unfolded in that black hole that they didn't address or didn't think to address. If nobody ever thinks that things are going to go south when they're setting things up, and so they either didn't worry about it or they didn't think it through or they didn't consult a lawyer on the front end. And so the litigation is almost always in the rubs and in the gaps.
And what percentage of time have people not addressed potential liability properly?
A majority of those times. I think going back to what Steve said, when these businesses form, or there's a lot of excitement. There's something new, something creative. Hey, we're going to do something good.
Passionate at that point in general.
Absolutely. And so, you know, when you're going through these, sometimes you don't hey, let's think about what if X happens or Y happens. What happens if...
Oh, God, that sounds like marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
When you go into business with somebody, it's not that different sometimes.
No, and it's not.
It is. And when just going back to your question, is that when something bad happens, the first thing we got to do is we got to come in and look, okay, now that this has happened, what do these documents, what do these agreements allow us to do in this situation? Would allow you to do, and that's kind of where it comes up.
When you get involved in a process where you've got litigation of that nature, what potential is there, what percentage of the time would you say you really end up more in a mediation role and the problem gets solved without going to court?
That happens a good bit. It really depends on how emotional people get. A lot of times this kind of litigation has emotion that has to be put in check as well, and get to the business aspects of it and try to find a mutual landing place where everybody can maybe not be happy, but at least be willing to move on. So we find ourselves, at least at first, always trying to say, is there a way to avoid litigation? Because we know litigation is timely. It costs you time.
Expensive.
It costs you money.
Yeah.
Well, and oftentimes, the other thing I would say, there's never a clear winner when it's over. I mean, it's not one side wins. It's not like a football game. You got a scoreboard down there at the end of the field. It's a 17-14 game over. You win, you lose.
That's absolutely right. It drains you.
It does.
It can. It has that ability to. And
you run the risk of both sides losing, really. I mean, because if they've spent tons and tons of money and time and energy fighting, that you ultimately end up without a way to win if you're unwilling to get together and compromise and through mediation or some other process find resolution.
What are the steps on the front end? Take any small, medium-sized business out there. You're starting up. Most businesses do start smaller. What do you do right on the front end to prevent these types of things playing out on the back end?
Right. So I think the first thing is you've got to figure out, are you equal partners? Are you going to be in a partnership? Are we going to form an LLC? Do we need to be incorporated? And sit down and talk through the different scenarios, because depending on what kind of business you're going into and how you structure it, how you fund it, that business structure can end up having a lot of the driver towards what happens down the road if things go wrong. So you got to decide on your actual business structure for what you want to do. And then you got to have honest discussions, almost like a prenup for a business of, okay, if this thing goes south, what are we going to do? And that sort of things. And nobody likes to think about that because nobody believes it's going to happen. So why are we going to waste time on the negative? That's not going to happen to us. This is going to be a fantastic business. We're going to retire billionaires. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. And if you don't have good documentation on the front end that really defines your rights as a shareholder or a partner or a member of the LLC, then you end up with a lot of gray areas, and gray areas lead to litigation.
When you say documentation, what is that documentation? How much needs to be outlined, and how much can be left gray?
Well, you can leave as much gray as you want, right?
No. What's the right way to do it is what I'm asking.
On the litigation side, the ones with lots of gray are the ones we end up seeing a lot more. But if you're forming an LLC, you need a good operating agreement that really lays out how you're going to operate, who makes decisions, how you're in charge. Because if you end up with two people and each are 50% owner, what happens if we disagree and I say A and you say B? Well, we're at a stalemate, right? So you got to have a ways to deal with that. If you're in a partnership, then you need to definitely have a partnership agreement that lays out exactly all the rules. Now, the statutes under Tennessee law will set out some default rules. So if you just say, we formed a partnership, but we didn't bother with a partnership agreement or anything like that, then the statutes are going to provide you some structure and rules that we're going to use to divide things up. But oftentimes, those default rules aren't really what people intended. And you can change those to a certain degree with an operating agreement or a partnership agreement or your bylaws if you're a corporation, those sorts of things. It's just really important to get those set up on the front end so that everybody understands each other's role and how we're going to operate this business.
And I would also imagine that there's a lot of businesses that haven't done this on the front end, but they begin to grow, and at some point they pick up the phone and say, hey, we need someone to come in here and take a look at this.
Make sure we did this right.
At 100%.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you didn't do it on the front end doesn't mean that if your business continues to grow that you can't address
it
at some point.
That's a good point.
No, that's a great point because – and that's what we see a lot of times is that you see these ideas that grow from something small, and then you see whether it's through investments, whether it's through other additional type of funding coming in. At that point in time, it's, okay, how are we going to address this? How are we going to handle this? And that's where you can – reach out at that point in time and look at how do we, you know, to the extent we even have an operating agreement, do we amend it? Because, you know, you have these form documents online that people will sometimes go and rely upon and use. And that just a lot of times just is not going to cover everything. And that's where I think when you come in, you can talk to an attorney that they're going to be able to really help you find those gray areas that those basic form documents aren't going to be able to allow you to do. So.
Makes sense. 267-1023 is the number. This Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money. Talk Radio 102.3.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number with us today. Steve Barham and Jeffrey Maddox with Chambliss, Sponer and Stoffel. All right, so we're talking about doing the proper planning on the front end as business owners to not end up on the litigation side. Obviously, you want an operating agreement, whatever type of documentation for your particular type of business. Do the conversations matter as much, I would think? The communication, say, between partners on the front end to get an understanding of where both of you really are?
Yes, having some good, honest conversations. A lot of it depends if there's a prior relationship as well between one, two, three, however many people are coming in to do this on – maybe their familiarity with each other. I mean, if they've done deals together in the past and moving together, that's a little bit easier. But if it's someone new, it's about having those honest conversations with each other about, you know, what are we doing with this? Where are we going from here? If we have a situation come up where we disagree, how is that going to be resolved? So having those type of conversations on the front end and kind of fleshing those out, I
and
think
then
is always
document.
Good.
Document the conclusion.
The understanding.
Yes. Right. Yeah. That's the real key, right? Because if you have those discussions and then I remember it one way and you remember it the exact opposite way and neither one of us bothered to write it down and confirm it, then those discussions don't have as much benefit to you. But
right.
If you got to the let's say on the front end, one of the things you're assessing is where, what, and if are our potential liabilities relative to this business. How do you address those types of issues on the front end? Liability.
Right. So that's primarily going to drive what type of entity you're going to set up, right? So,
okay.
So if you're concerned about personal liability for your business venture, you're probably going to want to get into some kind of limited liability corporation or a regular corporation. Something that insulates you from individual liability if you haven't signed personal guarantees. If you're just in a straight partnership, then you don't have necessarily the benefits of the corporate structure to protect you from the business debt that is strictly business debt that nobody guaranteed. If the business goes under, then you may be able to walk away from it as opposed to a partnership debt. They may be able to come after you directly. Which is why lots of times if you're in a business, in a small business, and you go to a lender and they're going to want a personal guarantee, and you got to decide, okay, who's going to sign those, and how much, if you and I go into business together and we're asked to sign a personal guarantee, can I get my guarantee limited to 50% of the total guarantee? Or can I get a separate indemnity agreement to where if they come after us, business fails, we have to pay back out of on the guarantee. If I have to pay 100%, do I have a right? Have we documented where I can come after you for half of that? Because most of the time the lenders are going to want each person individually liable for the full amount of that loan that you're guaranteeing. So you're going to want to make sure you've got something against your former friend and partner at that point.
Now, Steve, you're talking about liability relative to potential loans. How about the liability relative to the type of business? I have different types of liability. If I'm a brain surgeon, I have a certain type of liability. If I'm a financial advisor, I have that. If I'm a plumber and I have a plumbing company out there, now we're talking about workman's comp. What we really are identifying is all aspects of it, too.
Right. So the first thing that we always tell people is make sure that you have a really good relationship with the people that are selling you insurance. Mm-hmm. Because so much of that liability, you're talking about just straight business liability, you can insure. And if you've got good insurance that's going to provide you with quality coverage when you have an unfortunate issue, they will appoint you an attorney. They will pay for that attorney.
That's right.
And you will only be out your deductible, as opposed to you went to somebody and it was not good insurance and you got a policy that you thought had coverage, but turns out that it only covered you when it was raining on a Tuesday while you were standing on one leg, and all of a sudden you're facing your own liability. And so, that's something when I meet with somebody that's a small business person, I want to make sure that they've got a quality person in the insurance world that's looking out for them and giving them good policy opportunities to provide good coverage based on what they're doing for that kind of liability.
You know, it's kind of interesting when you go down that road, though, because now we're really talking about outsourcing certain third-party events. And it would appear to me that if I were thinking about that, whoever's handling the insurance is one of the aspects of that. Whoever handles the legal work relative to our firm is one aspect of that. Whoever does the accounting is one aspect of that. If you're not strong in those three arenas, you've really got – if you're strong in those areas, the potential for you having issues are going to be significantly less than if you're not.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I 100%, because like you know, we see right now cases going on where insurance has come into play because certain claims have been made that are covered by the insurance policies. And when those come into us, like Steve said, one of the first things we're doing is we're saying, all right, notify your insurance carrier, whoever your broker is, get in contact with them and talk with them about, hey, this is what we received. Do we have coverage? How is this going to operate? Because sometimes those insurance policies also allow you as the business to be able to pick the attorneys that you have. So having strong insurance and having those type of relationships with your brokers are very big. But also, like you said, the accounting, because that's from bookkeeping. We see that a lot in our world, is the bookkeeping issues that come up with a smaller business that's growing rapidly. They're not taking the proper measures to handle their cash the appropriate way. And sometimes that leads to issues as well.
How do I know I have good insurance? How do I know I have the right coverage for my business?
I think that a lot of that just driven by making sure that you've got a quality, reputable insurance broker in the community, that you've done your research. It's like, how do I know my doctor's any good?
Yes.
You know, you do your homework in advance. Okay, who is this? Is it fly by night? And you talk to other people that you know. I mean, we all have social networks where we can say, you know, I was talking to my insurance broker, and he said that I needed to insure the business. It's going to be a policy. It's going to cost me a lot of money. But if the meteor ever hits my building, I'm going to be really protected with this meteor insurance. Well, people might say, you know, that kind of sounds questionable. Maybe you ought to think about getting a second opinion from another broker. Here's a guy I work with. Give him a call. So I think that just checking out anybody that you're working with in the community is often the best way to make sure that you're with somebody who's competent, that's going to give you good advice.
Yeah, the referrals are great. I mean, go ask those friends that you have. Go ask just business people in general that you may not know who they use.
I'd give you a great example here. I'm going to assume with what you two guys do for a living, you don't know all the insurance guys in this area, and you don't know who all the bad ones are. But in the back of your mind, you have a list of three or four that are excellent, that you would absolutely have no problem saying, hey, Jim, you can go to Mary, Joe, or Bob.
Right.
They're going to cross the T's. They're going to dot the I's. You want to know who's a good surgeon? You don't have to talk to a doctor that's not. You can talk to a doctor that knows another doctor, but he's never done surgery on that doctor. You start talking to surgical nurses, they'll tell you who's good.
That's right.
Everybody can do XYZ if XYZ is straightforward, but if something goes wrong in that operating room, there's a percentage of men and women that know that are not flustered by that, and they go from plan A to plan B, and surgical nurses know that.
100, yeah, and it's if you have certain meetings with one insurance agent and another insurance agent, and you're going to learn pretty quickly the ones that know what they're doing and the ones that know the proper coverages to provide to you.
That makes a lot of sense. Give me some examples of where things fall apart, and let's start. And I want to take a couple of different ones: the partnership, the LLC, whatever. The members aren't getting along. Things are going south. What do these look like? What are the common reasons that you end up litigating?
Right. So a lot of times it's one person feels like the other person's not pulling their weight.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason would be that, you know, we were doing really well, and we got used to a certain income that doing really well generated, and then we've fallen on hard times, or new competition has entered the market and cut into our business, and now all of a sudden I'm not making what I was making before, and I'm not real happy about that, and so I think that it's your fault, and so we're getting into it in the office, and I think those are oftentimes the bigger things where people have a falling out, but it can be a myriad of different reasons why people don't have a good relationship anymore.
How do you get the emotion out of it?
It's hard. Sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it takes sitting down with your client and really having some hard conversations with them. It's a world outside, I think, of family law where you really see a lot of emotion mm-hmm. come into play. A lot of times you have people that have done well in their life and other things, and this is the first time something bad is going on. And they've got to where they were because they made the right decisions. And maybe this time they didn't make the right decision. And you're going to have to sit there and talk with them about it and talk with them about all the possible outcomes of this. Because when you can kind of do that and you can kind of lower the temperature, I think that's most of the time where you can at least get to some area where you can have a really productive conversation and good client relationship so that you can advise them going forward about what's going on.
What's it look like? We can't work it out ourselves. I've come to you. My partner's got another attorney. This is not going to go well. What does the whole process look like?
So assuming that we don't have an arbitration agreement, a lot of these agreements may have an arbitration agreement, which takes us down a whole nother road.
Okay. Yeah.
But let's assume that we're going to go into court. We're going to,
yes.
One of us is going to file a complaint, or maybe we'll race to the courthouse, but we'll get a complaint on file, and whoever filed first, the other side will probably file a counterclaim. And then it is just a process of discovery that generally starts out as written discovery where we send questions to one side, they send questions to us, we send demands for documents to them, they send demand for documents from us, then we get our questions answered, our written questions answered, our documents, and then we start taking depositions. Generally, in a business matter, there's going to be some experts involved, like the accounting experts or a business valuation expert. And then at that point, we'll either try to go to mediation and see if we can find a resolution both sides can sign off on and agree to, or it goes to trial and we're in front of a judge and or a jury having them decide the dispute that's left. A lot of it may have gotten worked out through that process, mm-hmm. but there'll be a breakup that has to be decided by the jury.
Here should be the takeaway for people listening to this show. Everything that Steve was just talking about, while it's all going on, the meter's running.
Absolutely.
And the cost is building.
Mm-hmm.
Solving these issues on the front end is huge. Or building out a game plan on the front end, whether it be for liability, whether it be for partners' agreements, all that. If you've resolved a majority of that, the amount of time that I'm going to spend with you and the amount of time I'm going to spend paying your firm is Resolve doing this on the front end, just like we said at the beginning of the show, in a much more favorable fashion?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. If the agreement covers all the issues, or as many of the issues as are generally covered, then the odds are there's really not much to dispute, right? It may be that the dispute is you get an accountant and I'll get an accountant, and we'll have them independently review the books, and then we'll look at what they come up with.
See what we have.
Yeah, what we have. But then once we know what we have, how we divide it's already set out, so there's nothing to fight about after that at that point.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think people have to accept is that, let's say I go into that business and I'm working four times as hard and I'm generating way more business out there, and the business ends up getting split 50-50 because that's what the agreement said. Well, part of that, unfortunately, is shame on me. I made a bad business deal, and sometimes I have to be able to accept the fact that what I deem to be fair, in essence, isn't exactly how this is going to shake down.
Right. Everybody's sense of fairness tends to be a little more favorable to themselves oftentimes. And so, yeah, what I always tell people, I was like, look, we're not looking for a resolution that you're going to just love more time. You have to just be willing to accept something you can live with and then move on.
267-1023 is the number. This Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money on Talk Radio 102.3.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. With us today, Steve Barham and Jeffrey Maddox with Chambliss, Bonner & Stafel. I want to get in. We're going to move to what we were discussing during the break. But let me ask one question. Arbitration. Is that good in an agreement? Is that a good thing to require arbitration? Or is it completely going to be dependent on the circumstances?
I would say oftentimes arbitration is a good thing to ask for because it maintains privacy.
Okay.
Once things get filed in the courthouse,
it's all public record.
All public record. Mm-hmm.
And
right.
It is very mm-hmm. difficult to keep things sealed or under wraps once it's in federal court. And arbitration is private. And people can't come and get your arbitration documents and use those to find out and dig in about you and get into your business. So one of the best things about arbitration is that it's private. It can be pricier because the arbitrator is going to be charging you for their time, whereas
okay.
the judge is not.
Okay.
So you have to be, you know, a lot of times you'll see an agreement that might say if this dispute is a greater than $50,000 dispute or $75,000 dispute, then it goes to arbitration. You can draft it up like that so that things that it's not cost effective to arbitrate get left for court, but other things that might be a bigger deal that you don't want to be public airing of your grievances, you do in arbitration and get that privacy.
So there's trade-offs to it, just like everything.
That's right. Yeah, the thought used to be arbitration is a less costly type of, and sometimes it still can be, but you're starting.
You can't make that assumption.
That's right. You just can't make that assumption with like a lot of people used to do. So,
all right, now let's move on to dealing with vendors and customers. What do we need to be aware of on the legal side of that?
All right. So when we were talking before coming on, I mean, one of the biggest things that we see in our world, especially if you're dealing with vendors, if let's say we sell widgets, whatever it mm-hmm. is, and invoicing, sending those, is coming up, working with a lawyer about coming up with terms and conditions as part of that invoice, meaning having repayment terms, having provisions that you can recover attorney's fees should the vendor fail to make payments for the widgets, accruing of interest on outstanding amounts owed, different types of terms. Those type of things are pivotal because a lot of people come to us and they ask, can we get attorney's fees, et cetera? One of the first things you're going to hear us ask is, well, what do your invoices say? What does your agreement with that vendor say? And if they don't contain those provisions, then a lot of times those are things that we may not be able to ultimately recover.
And or they don't even have a written agreement with a vendor.
There right. you go.
That happens a lot.
It's got to be common. I mean.
Oh, absolutely. And
I'm
you
sending
say
them
that.
An invoice. I'm doing what I need to do. I'm not.
That's right.
What terms do you even mean? I bet that one gets missed all of the time.
A lot of times you'll just, they'll put net 30 on there. and that's it. And they may or they may that may have been on the form that they found and they copied to use to make their invoice. And they don't really know. And it, depending on what you're selling, you may need a lot of different terms on there, and you may not need many. But one thing's for sure, if you're invoicing somebody and they're going to run up a $10,000 debt or something, and all of a sudden they don't pay, that could have an impact on your business. But if you don't have an attorney's fees provision in there somewhere that we can point to so that they pay your attorney's fees costs for going after them for failure to pay, then you're going to spend a good bit of that invoice money that you may get in a judgment on your legal fees going after them. And that then you're going to lose even if you win. Even if you ultimately collect that whole invoice, you've had to spend several thousand dollars or more on an attorney to go chase them, and now you can't collect it because you didn't have that contract provision. In Tennessee, is the rule is it's got to be in the contract where they've agreed to pay your attorney's fees, or we can point to a statute that comes into play, and there aren't that many statutes that allow a party to say, hey, you have to pay our attorney's fees.
How many businesses have relationships with vendors where there is no contract?
The amount that we see, I mean, most of the time there's something
okay.
there. But I will, that's just because I can promise you there are probably a lot of business relationships out there that there isn't some type of written agreement.
Or what they think is a contract really doesn't obligate anybody to anything. And you look at it and it's just kind of a letter that says, hey, I'll buy this from you and you'll sell it to me, and we'll work out all the rest of the details later.
Well, I mean, I can tell you business after business through the years of people I've talked to that run and own these companies where they didn't account for accounts receivable and what their cash flow needs were going to be.
Right.
I mean, that yes, if you agree to say, well, we'll cover this for 90 days. And particularly if you're going to deal with the big guys, if you're selling to Walmart or something, the hell, they may pay in 6 months. And they'll have an agreement that says they can do X, and all of a sudden your cash flow needs are double or triple what you need because you're literally carrying the weight of that financial obligation for them for X period of time.
Right. You better understand that if you sign that contract, because they may say, well, you can't charge us any interest on this invoice for 6 months or 8 months or ever. And all of a sudden you're the financier of their business and they pay you when you get around to it. And that's rarely beneficial for you at that point. And so you have to make sure that you're protecting yourself. The other thing that happens a lot that we see is somebody comes to us and they say, I got this deal in this company. They owe me $50,000. And they, you know, I got this agreement, and the company also signed a guarantee that they would pay me everything. And I say, okay, well, the company signed the guarantee, but what about the owners of the company? They signed that guarantee? No. Well, if that, you know, we've seen ghost LLCs where they just sort of disappear into the wind, and that LLC that you had a contract with, and
there's no money there.
With,
yeah.
There's no money there. It's just
there's
gone.
No assets. There's nothing.
And it gets really difficult sometimes to chase that money through the LLC if you even can, and try to get after them. So if you're dealing with somebody, and it's going to be significant, then you really need to think, okay, do I need to get a personal guarantee of the people behind this company so that I feel better about letting them go out, you know, extending credit to them that far with this invoice, or do I need to get paid up front?
And there's something big that are venue provisions,
okay,
and choice of law provisions in these type of agreements. Meaning, to the extent the bargaining power I have as a business when I enter into these, to say, hey, if a dispute arises, it has to be filed here in Hamilton County, or if it's in Georgia, it has to be filed in Catoosa County. That helps, at least from a business perspective, somewhat control the disputes as well. Is if there is a dispute, we're going to have to do it here where we operate out of, where we live, where we are out in the public. And so including those type of provisions where any disputes have to be done in Hamilton County or the surrounding areas are really big as well. Because a lot of the big companies, they'll put them, you have to go up to Delaware or something like that.
Or Arkansas, if you're dealing with Walmart.
267-1023 is the number of this Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money on Talk Radio 102.3.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. All right, we don't have much time left, but let's touch quickly on business bankruptcy. And you said there's some new things.
Yeah, so,
share them.
All right, so this is – I'm just going to touch on really the high-level stuff on this because – what happened is your typical Chapter 11, which is a business reorganization, mm-hmm. that is not a liquidation, is really made for bigger businesses. And you
like
hear about
really big businesses.
Right. I mean, you hear about Sears that have filed, Propex here locally that filed years ago. That was a big Chapter 11. And there are a lot of tools in Chapter 11 that allow that to go through. What happened is, I think in early 2020, it's called Subchapter 5. It's a streamlined, less costly process that small businesses can utilize to be able to come into the bankruptcy court, to be able to reorganize their debt, and hopefully within a 4 to 6 month time span, be able to come out of bankruptcy as a reorganized company, however that may look, whether it's a purchase, whether it's just a reshuffling of their debt structure, those type of things. It allows, it's a more streamlined process that Congress created that allows small businesses to be able to utilize. And the cap on that was increased during COVID to $7.5 million, meaning okay. your debt, the maximum amount of debt you can have, and their specific type of debt is $7.5 million. But most of your small businesses are going to fall under that.
Now, this subchapter 5 is a kind of a derivative of 11?
Yes,
of
it
the
is.
Simplified 11?
When we think of bankruptcy, we think really 7, 11, 13. 7's right. personal.
That's right.
11's a reorganization, and 13 is repayment.
It's typically a 5-year repayment plan for individuals. Businesses can file 7, but it's rare because if they're going to file 7, they're just going out of business.
And yeah,
just go out of business.
I tell people to think of the subchapter 5 bankruptcy a little bit like a chapter 13 for a business.
Okay.
So if they've heard of people who go in and they say, I want to restructure my debt individually. They go in and they pay a 13. They keep their house. They keep their cars. And they restructure things. And they make payments over the 5 years, that kind of thing. A lot of times that's very basically and not exactly. But it's kind of a way to think about this subchapter 5 because what they found was Chapter 11s were so expensive that
small business couldn't do it.
They just couldn't afford it. They had to just close. So they created a model that lets them go in, lets them have a real chance to reorganize and restructure their debt obligations in a way that potentially they can get a fresh start and keep the business going and not lose everything.
It seems like a good idea.
It's a great idea. It's been much needed. There was a lot going on prior to COVID. I mean, I think it was even before COVID came out that Subchapter 5 was created, and so it's a great idea. I know it's being utilized. We're seeing a lot more reports coming out that's just a lot more businesses are choosing that option.
Give smaller businesses a chance to make it.
That's right.
Steve, Jeffrey, thank you. Enjoyed it. Coming up next, the Ramsey Show, 1 to 3, 3 to 7 Sport Talk. We'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Thank you.